Hey everybody, it's Tim Hinton, the Beast of the Marching Arts. We are here on this podcast to remember Joe Allison, the respected adjudicator and educator. Here to talk about Joe are Monty Mast, Executive Director of the Cavaliers. Monty, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
Thank you so much for being here. And also Mark Silvey's here. Mark, how are you?
I'm good.
Thank you for being here. Mark, of course, is a lawyer who's been on some podcasts and who's also a great friend of the podcast and has a history as a percussionist, instructor, and an adjudicator. So Monty, I have you here. I mean, you know, we all have a lot of different relationships with people. Monty, you're here basically representing the judging side of Joe's life, although I know you have other parts of that relationship too. And Mark is here representing sort of the educator side, because Mark was a student of Joe's early in Mark's drumming career, which is very interesting. So we're each going to talk about that. Now, Monty, it's been heartwarming to see all the posts that people have shared about how much Joe's judging tapes and advice meant to them. I mean, it's been really wonderful to see all those on social media. He really did have an impact on the activity and on so many who are in it. So I'll start with you and your relationship with Joe.
Well, when I got into judging, Joe was one of those people who, just because of his nature, reached out to people. So as a new judge, he would be the person on the panel who typically said, "Hey, let's talk." And anything I can do to help, he was always so open. And he went out of his way to make every judge, new judge or new to Joe judge, feel comfortable and feel part of the activity. So I think that was a huge part of who he was and why his loss was felt so strongly by the judging community, because Joe was a friend of everyone just because of his nature. And so I think that's the first part of it. And then Joe and I worked on a couple of different projects. You know, one of Joe's passions was the education of judges and making sure that judging was done very well for everyone. And so I was instrumental in kind of hooking Joe up with Brad Kent from the Texas UIL, and Joe did some judges training when there was being a shift occurring in Texas in terms of adjudication. So there was a big, he was a part of that, and Mark McGahey and I kind of, you know, got Joe and Brad Kent together for that training.
That's great. And so you were on many judging panels with him. You traveled many places where he was there. So like, what was your experience about that as far as, you know, he was sort of like an elder statesman because he had been around so many years, had been at such a high level.
Yeah. And one of the things that Joe and I in particular shared was our love of food. And as everywhere that Joe went, you know, he would call up and say, "Hey, we're on the same panel together. When are you getting in? Do we have enough time to go to this restaurant?" And it didn't matter if it was a 4-star, you know, James Beard Award winner or a hole in the wall. It was about good food. And frequently he would call and say, "Hey, we're on the same panel together. Do you want to fly in Thursday night?" And then we would make Friday a food day. And his passion for that. But I think it was also the way he liked to connect with people is to break bread. That was just so cool with him. And the one thing that I do regret with Joe is he always wanted to go to the French Laundry and have a meal there. And it so turned out that, you know, my wife and I had been trying desperately to get into the French Laundry. And so we finally get a reservation and it's a table for four. So immediately I called Joe and said, "Joe, do you want to come do this?" And he's like, "Oh my God, I definitely want to do it." And it was, you know, he had a big event the same day that there was just no way to get out of. But he would have loved doing that. And so, you know, we would be in Indianapolis and he would have to go over to Oceanair and get his sticky toffee pudding and, you know, that kind of stuff. That would be Joe. But, he was so comfortable finding a hole in the wall barbecue place, you know, something that Guy Fieri would have, you know, done on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. That was a perfect place for Joe to go do, get a greasy spoon burger someplace. Perfect. But then, you know, he would go to a, you know, a prefix menu at a 4-star restaurant and be just as comfortable.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned that. I had the restaurant stuff in my notes too, because he was famous for, like, that was one of his passions, as you stated. And he could find, like, he somehow had a way to find the great food wherever he was going to be. You know, I don't know how much time he actually spent studying that or who he was calling to find out. Mark, I'm sure you had some special meals with him too, in some place where you never expected to be.
Yeah, I mean, Joe and I go way back, and from the very first, food was one of the ways that we shared time together. And you're absolutely correct, Monty, it could be a really nice place, it could be a burger place, it could be just a pizza place. We grew up in the same place, in the same area, Knoxville, Tennessee, and there were our local favorites that we had, and when he would come to town, we would go hit up all the local favorites that we'd been to for years and years and years. So, yeah, that was one of the best experiences with him, was getting to try new places that he introduced us to, but also going to our old favorites.
Yeah.
I think that was just, you know, he had that passion and drive to find something new. You know, he wasn't, you know, like you said, he would go to those old favorites, but he was probably also checking, hey, what new restaurants have opened in town? He wanted to know. And, you know, when he would come to Houston, he would say, okay, where do we want to go? But he would also have a list. I haven't been to this place. I haven't been to this place. I want to have good tacos, you know, whatever it was. And so we had an opportunity where he was in town judging something, and we went to Hugo's restaurant, which is a James Beard award-winning Mexican restaurant. And we did brunch on purpose because you could sample everything. Yeah, it was a big brunch buffet, and he couldn't have been happier just to try so many different things. And I think that's just kind of who he was. He really wanted to have an opportunity to sit down with people. He was such a people person that he wanted to know what made you tick, you know, what your interests were and where they intersected with his. And I was just really fortunate that my passion for food and wine and lined with his. So we became pretty close friends over that.
That's great. So, Mark, why don't you tell us sort of your relationship with Joe, how you met him, because it's very interesting. You were very young when you got to know him.
Yeah, I've known Joe and knew Joe probably longer than virtually anybody else you could talk to. In 1975, he plucked an otherwise unknown and unremarkable rising eighth grader out of the middle school band at Halls Middle School in Knoxville to be in the marching band that next year. And, you know, in thinking about everything since he's passed, and frankly beforehand, and I've always appreciated this, is that there are, and you and I have talked about it, Tim, there are in a person's life pivotal figures. And without any reservation whatsoever, I can identify Joe as one of those. When he came in and said, would you like to be in the marching band next year in the high school? And as an eighth grader, I'm thinking, sure, that would be great. It opened doors for me that no one else would have been able to do. You and I would not be sitting here talking right now had he not done that in the late spring of 1975. And it worked out conveniently because he and I also, that year, you could never do it now. I mean, the world was different 50 years ago, but he happened to live two streets behind me. And so when we would have practice and stuff that fall, he would drop me off at my house on his way to his house. And, you know, now you couldn't do that with a student. But, again, it was a more relaxed time back then. And so because of that, we struck up just a friendship. And, again, I would go up to his family's house, you know, for the holidays and whatnot. And it was so fortunate because, you know, had that not happened, I would have never had the opportunity to know him, the opportunity to explore and be exposed to music, food, so many different things through him. You know, had that not occurred, had I not been in the right place at the right time, I could have gone my entire life without knowing Joe, and what a tragedy that would have been. And so we shared so many experiences together as, you know, I was a student of his. Then when I instructed for him, and then he helped me get into judging in the 80s. And then he was there to cheer me on as I was in law school. And we stayed in contact after that. And through so many different things, he introduced me to the Marching Round Table. And all of those things, and so many more I probably can't even recall, I thank him for, because, again, he taught me to appreciate so much. He helped me grow as a musician, as a person. He helped open my eyes to things. And something Lonnie said was really interesting is that Joe was always interested in things that were new when he was speaking about food. That applied universally to Joe. He was always interested in exploring new things musically, from a culinary standpoint, from a travel standpoint. He was never satisfied with just what the current standard was. He was always exploring new boundaries, new options, because he wanted to be able to give more people the opportunity to be exposed to whatever the new thing was. And I appreciate that from him. And it's funny, because I've known him so long, I can remember how I addressed the world as a 12-year-old when I first met him, how I addressed the world as an 18-year-old when I taught for him, how I addressed the world as a 25-year-old when I was in law school, how I've addressed the world as a more grown-up adult more recently. And the effect and influence he had on how I developed as a person was both remarkable and profound. And again, I know it sounds like a lot like I'm just being a cheerleader, but there are three or four individuals, teachers, throughout my life that have made me who I am. And again, I have no reservations whatsoever about saying that Joe was the first one of those. And I hope that he understood at the end how much I appreciated that, because it really does and did form who I am today.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you for sharing that. And it's fascinating that, you know, so much history with him and such an impact he had on you over all these different times. Monty, when I think about him as an adjudicator, so many people have shared times when he had a profound impact on their program or the way they were thinking or the way they were thinking about their show, for sure. Do you have any examples of that or any times, judging times that you want to share where you know that he did that?
Well, it, ironically, I had lunch today with Brett Kuhn, and, you know, Brett is kind of in a different role with us at the Cavaliers, and he's really doing some really neat things with the organization about how we're preparing, you know, our staff, and also with GearWorks. And I told him I was doing this tonight, and he goes, you know, I still remember one sheet that Joe wrote, and it was in 1992, and all he wrote on the sheet at finals that year was 1984 Cadets, 1997 Santa Clara Vanguard, 1992 Cavaliers. That was all he wrote on the sheet. Wow. Brett remembers that sheet to this day. About, he understood how that developed, you know, and the struggle that they went through and how they developed everything. And he, you know, that was the thing. Joe had his own vocabulary that only he could use. You know, how he responded and why he was such an amazing effect judge is, it was so spontaneous. It wasn't a shtick. It wasn't, okay, I've got to say these following things. He responded. And that's what it was.
Well, and he had the talent and the expertise to do that.
Yes. I mean, and it was so honest. And you could always count on Joe to create a tape that you immediately handed over to the kids. It was always so positive. And even when you had issues in that show, or you were still trying to put lipstick on a pig that year, it didn't matter. He would phrase it in such a way that it made you feel good about what you were doing and the challenge and everything. So it's, it is a progress or a process that you go through. And he was always so positive.
Mark, do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, in two respects. The first is, and again, you talked about anecdotes. Joe's band director and my band director in high school was Mac Bowman. And Joe taught, obviously, for Mac, particularly that first year that I was in the band. And later on, I remember Mac saying, because, again, Joe was extremely knowledgeable in areas both inside and outside of his expertise. And I remember Mac complaining about Joe wanting to opine on something. And the assistant band director said, well, what does he know about that? Why does he do that? And he says, I don't know why he does that, but he's usually right when he says something. And so that's very much how he was. He was extremely gifted. He did increase the vocabulary, and he did it in a way that wasn't aggressive or wasn't offensive, that was positive, and that helped you, because he judged some of the lines I taught too, or when I was working with his drum line, that he would explain the concepts that he wanted or the principles he was trying to get across in a way that wasn't demeaning, but that was positive. You can criticize constructively or destructively. And I don't recall, and there may have been, but I certainly don't recall any destructive criticism. It was always phrased in a positive manner. He looked at it, he was one of the people who could see the forest and the trees. And that's what made him such a great effects judge, is because he got the entire product. It might take him a couple exposures to it because there's so much going on, particularly these days. There's so much happening on the field. And he was one who could catch all that. And he's like people who were, and he had an incredible recall. Golfers can remember what they shot on 14 at Sawgrass in 1961. Joe could do that with shows. He could tell you between Thursday night show and Friday night show what the differences were with no difficulty whatsoever, regardless of who the core was. He was that attuned, pun intended, to what was going on. And that's something that I really admired and appreciated about him, or what I tried to learn back when I was involved in the activity and doing some judging. I really tried to grasp that and incorporate it into the way I addressed the performances. And so he was a great educator in so many different ways. But the judging was really, for me at least, he was a great conductor. He was a great educator. But the judging, I think, is where he really reached the zenith of his talent and ability, because there he could affect groups at the highest levels, whether it was marching bands, indoor ensembles, drum corps, whatever it was, he could ride in the same vehicle as the very elite in the activities, but communicate with them on a level that helped them enhance what they were doing. He knew that much about it. He appreciated it on that level. And so that was, again, one of those remarkable things about him, is that he had such a grasp of this. He was truly an expert at his craft. And I hope that people will appreciate that as his legacy.
Yeah, I think one of the other things is he was so passionate about making sure that everybody who was a judge put the same type of effort and, you know, made sure that they understood every detail about the craft of judging. You know, it wasn't, that was kind of one of his passions, is making sure he felt like every kid and every instructor deserved an A+ tape from every judge that they came in contact with. So his passion was to elevate the judging across the board. If he could help me as a judge, he knew that a whole bunch of kids and a whole bunch of instructors benefited. So that was, he wanted to push that kind of focus forward. But at the same time, he never was preachy about it or told people, oh, you have to do it this way. It was find your own voice, but make sure you're creating a positive impact with your tape commentary that is kid-friendly, is helping those instructors learn something that they may not have known.
And I think the reason he did that, and Monty is, again, absolutely correct about that, and I think the reason that he was so good about that is because he genuinely liked the people. He liked judges. He liked instructors. He loved the kids. He wanted everything to be for the kids. And by kids, I mean performers. And he introduced me to so many different people within the industry. I mean, in the later years, once I had ended life as a human and become a lawyer, I would go to events with him like DCI or something like that, or even before then. And he would introduce me to people who were icons in the activity, because he liked the fact that he could be a conduit for that. In 1980, I don't remember, 84, I got to meet, because of Joe, you know, so many different people who were the icons of the activity at that time. And the same thing in more recent years. And so, again, he liked people. He liked being able to make those connections for people. And he was so good at what he did because he genuinely enjoyed it and liked it.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the things that was so obvious about him, is if he didn't get pleasure out of it, he wasn't going to do it. You know, that was one of the things, is, you know, he wanted people to have that love of what they were doing. And that came through in all of his judging commentary. I mean, you know, the performance that DCI put on their website, which was, what, 2013 or 14 Crown, I can't remember what year. And you just hear the passion that he has for everything that's going on, and his honest reactions to those things that he was hearing. And if he didn't enjoy it, he wasn't going to do it. And I think that's a valuable lesson for all of us. If you don't enjoy it, don't do it. But, you know, that was very obvious from what he did.
You know, a minute ago, Monty, Mark made the comment that Joe could see the forest and the trees at the same time. You nodded really big. Do you want to speak to that? Because I do think that that's really difficult.
It is. You know, I think that's one of those things. Joe was great at understanding, like, we always talk about judging through time. Okay, so you've got a 10-minute show. Where are you at minute one, minute two, minute three? You may be great at one moment. You may be struggling at another. Where are you in that time? And he could put it in perspective. Maybe as well as anybody that I've heard do it verbally. And he could do it in real time, I think, was the ability that he had that I was always envious of, because I would always go back and think, I should have thought of phrasing it this way or whatever. And Joe boom, he had the vocabulary in his own style that he could immediately boil it down to a couple of words and not come off as, you know, trying to spout the dictionary and go into chapter and verse on something. He could go, hey, this is what it is, and I'll move on to the next thing. And that was an innate ability that, you know, any top judge has. And he was just exemplary in that area. But I also think he understood where an organization was. If you were a developing band, one of my favorite critiques that I sat next to him with in was he was, you know, this was a developing band. They were small, had some inherent challenges, and the dialogue that he had with the director and that staff, just you could have, you know, videotaped that and said, this is how a critique should go, because he really helped that director understand a couple of things in that process that they had never had crossed their mind. And he was so valuable to, you know, in particular young teachers, to get them to think maybe this should be your priority instead of that. And he had a way of doing that so comfortably and not coming across as I know better than you.
Well, do either of you have anything else you want to say, or any final stories or anecdotes or memories that you want to share before we wrap up this conversation?
I just want to add, Tim, that because we don't have, you know, one of his former collegiate students on here, but I know for a fact that the exposure I had to him as an educator and through conversations I've had with some of his other former students, how education of up and coming band directors and musicians was also supremely important to him. And we haven't really talked about him as an educator in that respect, but, you know, he was a band director either at the high school or collegiate level his entire life. And the impact he made there was probably even more far reaching than his role as an adjudicator, because he certainly affected a lot of performers' lives, you know, providing positive feedback, but his role as an educator for future band directors is something that will continue to live forever, because, you know, the generation of students that he had now has their own generation of students that they've educated who are now sort of band directors and grandchildren band directors, you know, and so that legacy will continue forever. I know in the limited time that I had with him early on in his career, his educational style was very rewarding to be around. When I worked with him after I graduated high school and I was teaching the drumline for him, again, he was even-tempered. He was not belittling. He was not demeaning. And there were some bands that he worked with that were pretty rough back in those years. And he was just impatient, just as patient, and just as concerned with providing the best experience possible for the kids as he was when he was working with Santa Clara and the Blue Devils and the Cavaliers and everybody else who were at the elite levels. And that carried through into the collegiate years when he was teaching at the college level, because then he really did get to impact the future of music education. And I think that was also unbelievably important to him. I know because he and I talked about that at length. So I hope, again, that people will remember him as an adjudicator, as an educator, as a foodie, as an aficionado of the culinary arts, and as a great friend and great mentor. He was all those things.
You know, when somebody asked me a question, what is Joe's legacy? And, you know, I don't think Joe ever worried about what his legacy was. He was so selfless about that. He just wanted everybody who he came in contact with to share in kind of the love of the activity of whatever it was that they were doing, whether it was, you know, you know, eating a burger or judging it at the top level of DCI or BOA or WGI. It didn't matter. He just wanted everybody to be involved. And he took young judges, young teachers, whoever it was, and said, if there's anything I can do, yeah, that was just his approach. And you got that from him. I relish those times where we would just sit and talk and not really have an agenda about what we were talking about. But when he was really passionate about judge education, I learned so much, and I bring it into what I do with the Corps today, what I did as a fine arts administrator. It was just, something that his approach to how he interacted with people is something that is a huge legacy of Joe's, and I take it with me, as I interact with other people. So, he's certainly going to be missed. You know, talk about a battler on how he approached the cancer and everything. Such a positive person. I was always impressed with how, no, I'm not going to let this get me down. I'm going to beat it. I'm going to do this. And he did three times. Couldn't do it the fourth, but that kind of showed who he was, and his character and how he approached things. It was always positive.
Well, I've enjoyed this conversation. Thank you guys for speaking so eloquently and sharing so honestly and personally about that. I knew that would be the kind of conversation that I wanted to share. So Monty and Mark, thank you so much for having this conversation. Of course, our thoughts go out to his family and friends, and we're glad we could remember Joe in this way on this podcast. Monty and Mark, thank you for having this conversation.
You're welcome, Tim. It was a privilege.
Yeah, it was an honor.